Ron and Anian.
The drama, the stuff that happens behind the scenes that you don't see, and the decisions you have to make as a mechanic and a shop owner to keep the customer happy, because that's part of what you're supposed to do, right? Fix the car and keep everybody happy at the same time.
You got the catalog of happy, so smooth, give me your heart and make it real, or else forget about it.
The Car Doctor.
We need something that seals, but something that won't create an issue elsewhere down the line. So, you know, for a $25, $30 bottle of sealer, it's worth a shot.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
We're all being fooled by the car companies. We really are. They're taking advantage of us, and I can prove it to you. I'll show you how stupid they think we really are. Article in the paper today. This is out of the business section of the local paper. I'm sure it's across the country, around the world. Business briefs. Audi is recalling 107,000 U.S. vehicles for a Takata airbag problem. This Takata airbag problem just won't go away. This is like a bad rash in cheap underwear. It just keeps coming up on you when you least expect it, right? It's just like, geez Louise, come on. Volkswagen's recalling nearly 107,000 older vehicles sold in the U.S. by its Audi luxury brand because Takata's driver airbag inflators may not function properly or could hurl shrapnel in a crash. There you go. I'd buy one of those. The vehicles may have one of the 1.4 million airbag inflators that Takata recalled in December. They have a new and distinct problem. Well, thank God it's new and distinct, but can still explode with too much force and blow apart a metal canister. The new problem has led to at least one death. So basically, 20 years ago, when everybody in the industry said you're putting a shotgun in front of the face of all the drivers, right? And no, it's going to be a good thing. Yeah, good. It's going to definitely thin out the population. Many of the cars in the Audi recall, and this is the part where they're making fools out of us, right? Many of the cars in the Audi recall are more than two decades old. 20 years. It took them 20 years to figure this out. And these are the best and the brightest we got. They include certain 2000 and 2001 TT Roadsters, the 2000 TT Coupe, the 98 A8, the 98 through 2000 A6 and A4. Volkswagen will notify owners in March, but there are no replacement parts available at present. That's the killer line. So we've got a problem. You're driving around with a bomb in front of your face, and we've got no solution. But it's okay because it's an older car, and there's probably not a lot of them left. I mean, they're dreaming. They're smoking something because in the first place, there's a Volkswagen out there that actually lasted 20 years. I mean, there's an Audi out there. There's a 20-year-old Audi that's worth putting an airbag inflator in. I mean, what, six? They don't have seven new inflators? Eight? Nine? Ten? Like, come on. And we accept this. And, you know, we'll continue to accept this. It blows my mind. You know, I don't want to get political, but you look at the state of the country in politics, right? How'd we get here? We got here because we allowed it to happen, and it happened, all right? I'm not picking sides. I'm not picking parties, but we've got ourselves in the current state and situation because we allowed it, all right? We're allowing it in a lot of ways other than politics. Look what we're doing to the auto industry. We're allowing them to build ridiculous vehicles with a lot of junk in them that don't work, that are almost impossible to fix, and we're all looking for immediate answers on why doesn't this work or why doesn't that work? How can I get this solved? You know, the definition of insanity is you keep doing the same thing over and over again and you expect different results. I think that's a definition of stupidity, too, because that's basically what we are. And then right next to it, I can't start the show without talking about this, because this is right next to it in the article, in the paper. Out of Detroit, for the first time, proving that the government doesn't really like us, the U.S. government's Highway Safety Agency has approved the company's request to deploy a self-driving vehicle that doesn't meet federal safety standards. Great! You know, I'm thinking hopefully one of these self-driving vehicles runs into a Volkswagen with a bad Takata airbag, and that's it. The problem is over. The car blows up. The self-driving vehicle gets taken out. Hey, it's all over. We take out two for the price of one. Hopefully nobody's in either car. It's, you know... just remember, you know what you call 500 Volkswagens at the bottom of the river? A good start. Let's get the show going. Oh my God, I can't believe the things. I got to stop reading the paper. I got to do more TV reruns. Hogan's Heroes and Criminal Minds, and like I'm happy. Mike in Delaware. What's going on, sir?
Hi, how's it going?
Good, sir. Thanks for calling the show today. What do you got?
So I heard a couple people calling earlier about a car problem that seemed very similar to mine.
Okay.
So I just wanted to throw this out there if they're still listening. So what happened was I was sitting in my car one day after I was idling for a little bit, and then I had it off, and I was just looking at my phone with one leg out of the car door with the car door open. So after when I went in my house, I tried to lock my car. It wouldn't even lock or anything. So I just figured, okay, battery's dead. Let me just try to jump it in the morning. So next day it wouldn't jump. I had it hooked up to a car much larger than mine. I have a 2013 Jetta.
Okay.
And
how's your Takata airbag? How's your Takata airbag? Kind of makes you wonder, right?
Yeah, it does. And this is actually the first I'm hearing about that. Right. So I actually would like to look into that.
If you wait another 7 or 8 years, they'll come out with a recall for you too. This way you don't feel left out because, you know, it seems like everybody's going to have this. But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead, brother. What were you saying?
So I ended up calling AAA, and they were able to come out with their Jumpstart kit that usually always works. So that didn't work. And I put my OBD in, and I couldn't even get the codes to read. So I ended up having to take it to the dealership, and they told me it was this thing called the J519, which is an electrical component. And they told me that this was going to be a $1,200 repair. So I didn't like that number. So I called around to a couple different electrical shops, and the guy was telling me, he said, actually, this happens somewhat often to mechanics when they're working on cars, when they'll have the door open for a long time. What happens is it actually triggers the security system where the car's computer, if it thinks, I guess, if the door's open too long, it thinks the car is being stolen. So it'll completely shut it off. Your engine won't crank. And it'll act like it's completely dead, even though it has battery. And I did put a volt checker on, and it did have battery. So what happened was I ended up triggering this system by sitting with my car door open too long. And all I had to do was disconnect the battery to reset it and reconnect it, and the car started again. So, I mean, obviously, it could be a number of things. It could be the starter, but...
Yeah, but you know what? But you know what they're going to do with this information now? Now everybody, the next time anybody has a car that doesn't crank over, they're going to run out and disconnect the battery, wipe out any trouble codes that might have been collected, wipe out any freeze frame data that might have been collected, and make, you know what I mean? And believe me, I get where you're coming from. I've experienced this particular problem. BMW does this. BMWs will not start if the driver's door is open.
Okay.
They don't crank over. So I'm thinking it's a German car thing, because maybe there's higher crime rate in Germany. I'm not sure, but
yeah, that's very possible.
You know, but over here we, you know, over here nobody wants a Volkswagen, so nobody's going to steal it. But sorry, but yeah, I get where you're coming from. Hey, listen, I'll tell you what. There's a lot of anomalies with cars and electronics today, that things that just we've never seen that are just coming up, and you're looking at it and you're going, well, you know, gee, my last one didn't do this, but your last one didn't have 60 or 70 computer modules on it and more electronics on it than the space shuttle. So, you know, yeah, I can dig it. I can. But you hear my point, right? So imagine the next guy gets a car that it's a communication fault, or it's a keyless ignition system, and the car doesn't crank over, and somebody heard that phone call. And what's the first thing somebody's going to do? Because everybody wants to save money. They'll go out, disconnect the battery.
That's why I say, I mean, I get that it could be a number of things, but I'm coming from the place where, like, that was something that I couldn't afford, so...
Right, yeah, no...
The dealership will not, you know, the dealership isn't going to say, oh, well, you know, maybe it's this, maybe, you know...
Right.
Did it work? They obviously... It's been running great for the past 6 months now.
But did it work? And, did you disconnect the battery and it worked?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
It worked like a charm. It hasn't had a problem since.
J519. Kind of a, I don't know that I would, like, what were they thinking? You taught me something today, Mikey. I haven't heard this one yet. I may know it as something else. I'll have to think about it. But,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, why would they, good Lord, I got to retire. So it's time to run away, you know. You were going to say something, Mike. What was it?
Oh, I was just going to say another thing is they were telling me as well that like you can get this green type of liquid that can fill up in your fuse box. And they said at times that could cause a problem itself. And if you hit that with some electrical spray, that could help with some connection problems if it is a connection problem.
Yeah.
So
be careful where you're going there, because the electronics in cars today, I'll tell you what, I think the majority of cars in the future aren't going to be scrapped because of mechanical issues, engine transmission and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be electrical issues. I think you're going to see cars that are down closer to harsh environments, by the ocean, by the beach, dirty, dusty conditions. I think those electrical systems are going to suffer more, and they're the ones that are going to have the bigger issues that, you know, have the bigger problems. So it's something to be aware of. Hey, you know what? Michael, I appreciate the call. It's really a great call.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for sharing with us. And like I said, you wait about 6 or 7 years, you'll get that Takata airbag recall, and then you can get it fixed.
Yeah, I'll look into that. Yeah. I appreciate that.
You know how to do that, by the way, real quick. And for everyone else out there, go out to NHTSA.gov. National Highway Traffic Safety Authority.gov, and just plug in your 17-digit VIN, and any recalls that vehicle is up for right now will show up.
Okay, great.
All right? So, and that's the power of the internet. That's the internet for a good use. Michael, I appreciate the time. Take care. You have a good rest of the day.
All right, you too. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye. 855-560-9900. The equal and open exchange of ideas. I've heard that concept before. I'm Ron Anini, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this.
Write it on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
Hey, let's get on over and talk to Pete in Delaware, 07 Lincoln Town Car. Pete, you're on with the Car Doctor. Thanks for taking the time and calling the show today. What's going on?
All right. Well, I got a leak, and I have no idea where it's coming from.
Okay.
And it's in the back seat on the passenger side on the floor.
All right.
The only place the water is.
Okay.
I've taped up the sunroof, you know, the stop it in case it rains, you know.
Right,
once
right,
it got
right,
dry,
right.
And I, you know, got the water out of there as best I could.
Right.
And I checked the front vent, you know, make sure there ain't leaves all in there and all the stuff. So, and it's still leaking.
Okay. Have you owned the car since new?
No. I just owned it a couple of months.
All right. You owned it a couple of months. Has the leak always been there since you've owned it?
Well, I just found out about it maybe a week ago.
Okay.
I just noticed it just in the back seat of the car.
Does it? Which side? It doesn't really matter, but which side is it? Passenger side?
Passenger side. Passenger, right.
Is the area in the front of the back? Well, okay, let me ask the question like this. The front seat.
Yeah, I know what you're going to ask me.
Yeah. Is the area under the passenger side front, is that part of the carpet dry? In other words, could the water be rolling from the front to the back?
Well, it's fairly dry, you know. I mean, it's slightly damp. I mean, you can barely tell that if it's damp, you know. It's just got a slight damp feeling to it.
So
you know?
It gets.
It's not like it's soaking wet, because I would think that would be soaking wet. If that, I mean, there's a lot of water.
Water kind of has a mind of its own. What I'm thinking about is, you know, and you have the sunroof completely sealed.
Well, I sealed it. I just sealed it, or, you know, I put it around the section that should keep the water out with masking tape. Then I put regular tape over the top of it.
Well, it doesn't work. If you're gonna seal part of the sunroof, seal the whole thing or don't bother, because the water's just going to run around from one side to the other. If the drains are clogged on both sides, it's going to back up from one side and fill the other. Remember,
yeah, but I sealed both the whole damn roof.
Okay, and still have a problem. Right, that's what I'm asking. Well, I said that. Do you?
I did.
Okay,
yes.
So the whole sunroof is sealed. All right.
Yes.
Does it look like the car has been in an accident at all?
No.
All right.
No.
So the next thing I'm going to tell you to consider or look at is, now when you open the doors, all right, do you hear water sloshing by chance?
No, I tried that.
Do the door panels?
I had it in my other Lincoln.
Okay. Because what I'm thinking about is,
and I took out the plugs, you know, and then put the water.
Well, yeah, what I'm thinking about is, you know, inside under the door panels there's a plastic sheet. It's called a water barrier. And if that if the car ever had a power window repair or the door was open to have any sort of repair, locks, window regulator, that kind of thing repaired, and that water barrier isn't sealed back, then that will create this particular problem. It'll either fill with water and spill over, or it'll just come out depending upon how it's damaged and allow water to leak, and it'll come out from under the door panel and leak onto the carpet underneath and feed its way in.
Well, here's the thing, though.
Go ahead.
On this section, I felt all around the top, around the sill plate, so on and so forth. There's no water up there. There's no dampness, no wet, no nothing. So it would be coming in. That would be wet, I would think, right?
Okay. Well, yeah. So then the next thing is you got to pull the carpet up. No, we'll see.
Well, I solved the problem real easy. I drilled a hole in a rubber plug for now.
Okay. So
just another drain out, and there was a lot in there. You know?
Yeah. Right. So, but if you want to fix it the right way, you're gonna pull the carpet up or at least lift it up because you want to see where's the water coming from. That's the catch.
Right.
You know, it could be coming in from the back window and leaking down under the seat onto the floor and collecting there. It could be coming through the water barrier and coming down the sides, or it could be coming. It doesn't sound like it's coming from the sunroof area, but until you know the direction, it's hard to pin down. Water leaks are tough. You know, water leaks are tough. It could be a trunk leak that's working its way up to the front of the car, but until you pull the carpet up or at least pull the back seat out to get a reference, is there any water under the back seat? Do you see any signs of stains?
So, yeah, well, I haven't. I haven't pulled the back seat, but I'll pull that up.
You know,
check it out. That's a good idea.
But you know,
some of the stuff in the trunk, if you go to do the trunk, you got to rip the whole trunk apart, and it's.
Well, I don't know. I don't know that I'd start there. I'd start, I would start. I think you're in the right area. You know, the trunk, I would open the trunk. Is there any water in any of the wells?
No.
Then I don't think it's necessarily in the trunk, or the heaviest portion of it's in the trunk. I would look more towards where you're at, and I would just take the rug up and go drive it through a car wash. Go drive it through a car wash that you can sit in. Do you see water coming in from anywhere?
Well, here's the thing. I didn't drive the car, okay? I let it sit there.
Right.
Pretty much dried it out, and it didn't accumulate any more water except probably what was residual from previous until I saw it. You know, I didn't even know what was happening.
Right.
And I just let it sit there, and when I came out a couple of days, you know, after we had this rain we had here, and it was like I could have thrown a fish in there. You know?
Right. Well, but that's what I'm saying. If you pull the carpet up. If you pull the carpet up, drive it through a car wash, at least you'll get a direction from where the water comes. And that's really the best way to approach it. Water leaks. Water has a mind of its own. It's very repairable. The question is, and the problem is, if you continue to drive around with the hole in the bottom of the boat, how soon before the water just being there damages something electronic? And I'm not saying it will. I'm just not saying it won't. So I don't know that I'd be happy with a car that has a water letter router in it. Consider taking the carpet up and driving through a car wash, at least diagnose it properly. Good luck. 855-560-9900. We're back right after this. Back, Ron and Ian, the Car Doctor. You know, we're talking about, well, we talk about this every week, but it seems like this week is more so. But we're talking about wiring and problems with wiring and CAN networks and diagnosing electrical problems. And it's really the tip of the diagnostic sword now, right? You need electrical wiring diagrams to show where you're going. And the folks at Mitchell One really understand that. They've come out with an update to their wiring diagrams. They're now interactive wiring diagrams, and it's kind of neat. I was playing with it this week in the shop, And it's the idea that you look at a wiring diagram with components, a brake pedal position switch or an accelerator pedal position sensor, and you click on the highlighted text, and then it brings up a separate box, and it'll have things like real-world fixes, top repairs, causes and fixes, specs, OEM testing. It gives you a separate list and breakdown showing you component location. Just good, solid information, and it's something the industry has needed for such a long time. That it's really nice to see that Mitchell has come out with it, and it's going to be made available across the board in their Pro Demand Auto Repair. You can find more information at Mitchell1.com. But thanks, guys. We appreciate the hard work you do and to give us, because without them, without information, we're lost. So we thank Mitchell for that, and we'll put it to good use. Let's get back to the phones. Let's go over to Nick, South Carolina, 97 Jeep Wrangler, and some questions. Nick, how can I help? Welcome to the Car Doctor.
Yeah. Hey there, Ron. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
97 4.0 liter, bought it as a project car, had a piston, skirt failure. So we thought, knew I was going to swap the engine out. I did, got a crate engine from Jasper. And it, ran beautifully for about 3,000 miles or thereabouts. Apparently there's a manufacturing problem. It was later determined with it, ate up the bearings, no oil pressure. So they sent me a new engine. I put in the second engine, don't have the oil pressure problems, runs great, except that it runs rough. Kind of looking to figure out where I need to diagnose it, and I have some fuel trim numbers, and I know you like fuel trim, so
yeah,
I'd
love
talk
fuel
about
trim. Tell me, so it's run rough since you put it in?
Yep.
Okay.
Exactly.
Have you told Jasper yet?
No. Okay. No, it's running, other than that, it runs beautifully.
All right. Well, listen, I'm more than glad to help you diagnose it, but I would make Jasper aware because they're going to want to walk you through some very specific things, too. It's funny. I just saw the Jasper rep in the shop on Thursday, and we were talking, and he said, what do you think of the product? And I said, I think you guys have good stuff. I said, I think you got your problems like everybody else, but one thing I know is you stand behind it, and you'll make it right. So if you let them know, they'll take care of it. They'll help you walk it, you know, through it.
Okay.
So,
good to know.
You know, this is a rough running idle, or a rough at idle problem, or a rough all the time problem?
Yeah, it's only noticeable at idle. And I mean, it's not horribly rough, it's not dancing all over the place, but
right. It's
definitely a rumbling engine, no doubt. And my fuel trim numbers at idle are perfect.
Okay.
But when I'm running, my short term is 2 to 10, the long term sort of settles out around 10.
Okay. I mean, they're not terrible. It's running a little lean, you know, so they're putting a little fat in it. Have you, you know, since the last engine, did you do a parameter reset, disconnect the battery, bleed the PCM data, you know, bleed the PCM down, and
I did
through all that?
I did. I've heard you describe how to do that, and I did. And I should be real clear, those long-time fuel trim numbers are negative.
Oh, so... All right,
it's running rich, I guess, right?
Yeah, give me the numbers again. So long-term is negative and short-term is positive?
No. Everything's pretty much on the negative side.
Okay, so it's running too rich.
Yeah.
All right. So just for giggles, have you tried creating a vacuum leak, leaning it out, and seeing if it smooths out the roughness?
Interesting. No, I haven't, but that's a good test to confirm that.
Right? Yep. And then, you know, why is it that is a little to the fat side. So let's start to cut things out. Let's get rid of the purge line coming from the tank. We have a purge valve issue. You know, what do the O2s tell us? Will the O2s, you have any propane?
I do.
If you shoot some propane at it, does that send the O2s full rich, full range?
Yeah, and so I don't want to be one of those callers, but I did not mention, does have a check engine light,
okay.
And it's a 441, I think, which is purge valve.
EVAP, right.
Yeah.
Let's go fix that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, let's go fix that. So,
but just for knowledge,
yeah. But for knowledge's sake, well, what I would do is I would cut the purge off. I would just remove the EVAP line, the purge line, the feed, from it, and just does it smooth out the way the engine runs? And if it doesn't, at least you know where you're going to diagnose. But just for knowledge's sake, let's pretend it didn't have a check engine light and an EVAP fault.
Right.
So let's go look at. I always like to make an engine stand alone. Feed it some propane. Right. What does it do? Make an air leak. What does it do? And then the other thing I was going to have in my mind with you was, Could this be a mount problem? I don't think so, not from your description. But is it different in park, drive, neutral, reverse? Does it change with engine and gear selection? Although I should ask, is this a stick or an automatic?
It's a manual.
Yeah,
but when I put the clutch to it, it doesn't seem to really change.
Right.
It's pretty much consistent.
Right. And then, you know, just because it wasn't like this with the last engine, and I'm sure you swapped over sensors and everything from the other engine, right? Could we possibly...
Yeah, it was just a long block.
Yeah, could we possibly have... the mount's not sitting correctly, but you've got some other things going on here. Fuel trim is cockeyed. You've got a purge valve issue. You know, obviously make sure engine temperature comes up to spec. It should be in the 185, 200 range.
Mm-hmm. And, it is, exactly.
You know, so it's warm. And then, you know, watch their O2s. Shoot some propane at the O2s. If nothing else, you'll learn how an O2 works. All right?
You'll see
it go full range. You'll see that O2 go over 9/10 of a volt. You'll go, yeah, the O2s are working. They're capable. They've got the ability.
Right.
So, all right.
But, all right. Sweet. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, sir. Enjoy it.
Diagnosis.
All righty.
All right, man.
You're very welcome. Take good care. Yeah, like, let's just make it, you know, let's just, here, I'll tell you a story. So, we had a 2011 Nissan Versa this week. All right? And this is along the lines of, you know, diagnosis is just, break it down into simpler pieces. And it had this horrendous noise in the right front. It sounded like every time you hit a pothole, the right front wheel was going to fall off the car. It had a clunk and a bang like, you know, you wouldn't put a relative in the car. Well, you might put my relatives in the car, but people that you like, you wouldn't put them in the car, you know. So we looked at it, and you could see the right front strut was blown. You know, leaking oil, it was bad. So put two struts in the car, and the noise went away, or the noise changed. It was diminished. It was probably 80% gone, and still something was there, but not nearly what it was. This is a 152,000 mile, 9-year old car. You know, North Jersey roads, potholes, in and out of New York City every day. You know, one of those. So we looked at it again and could see that there was a tear in the lower control arm. Yeah, well, you know, I'm trying not to spend money on this college kid's car, but okay, we'll put two lower control arms in it. That changed the clunk. That got rid of it with its consistency. And now I'm just down to an occasional clunk. But it just sounded horrible. What could it be? We put it up in the air. Let's see. We've tightened everything. We've looked at everything. We've changed everything we can find that goes bad. And then I remembered Nissan. I'm not sure why they do this. But Nissan has an engine cradle, a cradle that supports the front of the engine, front of the car, front suspension. And then off the back of it, they put a wishbone connector that's rubber mounted to bushings. And I realized the bushings were worn out in the cradle, and the cross brace was actually smacking the bottom of the cradle every once in a while, making the noise. So the choices are put another $1,500 into a car that's not worth $1,500. Wasn't worth the two struts and the control arms, but they were unsafe or approaching unsafe, or come up with an alternative plan. I thought about it. I went in the back. I have some older exhaust hangers with heavy rubber strap, and we pushed down on the brace the one way, slid the exhaust rubber hanger in between so it would act as a damper, took the car down the road. Sounds good enough to drive for another 152,000 miles. You know, sometimes diagnosis is just make it simple. Don't make it more complicated than it needs to be. Good Lord, the car has the ability to do that. The car will make it way more complicated if you let it. So just think in simple terms. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Welcome back. Let's get over to Ricky in West Virginia, 12 F-150. Rick, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going, man?
Good, sir. What's going on?
Well, it happened, I'd say, within the first 15,000 miles that I bought the truck.
Right.
And the first time I felt it, when I would put it in drive and start to take off, I could feel like a drive shaft kind of
thump,
clanking around underneath the floorboard.
Like it was thumping?
Yeah, like a... grind, not a grinding noise, but just I could feel it on my feet, you know,
right.
Like a something kind of like a little strap or something maybe wrapped around the drive shaft and just kind of bouncing against the floorboard.
Okay.
I was like, that's odd, you know? So I tried to look up under it. You know, everything's closed. You can't really see nothing under there.
Yeah, no, I get it.
And I was like, eh. And I said, well, I'll just forget about it. Well, then when I go through a parking lot, through over a speed bumper, it would, like, almost like it'd miss a gear, you know, the transmission would just make a jerk, you know, an awful jerking. I said, man, that's strange. So it was under warranty. I brought it to the dealership, told them about it. And of course, you can't replicate that. You can't make it.
Right. Well, you
make
could.
It happen.
You could, but it would take time, and they usually don't want to take the time to do it.
Yeah, no. So and they said, well, it's a closed transmission. I don't want to. If I tear into it and then it starts leaking, you know, then you got a leaking transmission or something.
Well, that's no reason not to fix anything. That sounds like a guy trying not to fix something. Especially if you brought it to him. This is when the truck was fairly new, Rick?
Yeah, and he sold it to me as if he said, well, these transmissions are all computer ran now, and they kind of they shift to your driving style. They kind of adapt to your driving style, kind of say.
Well, let me ask you this question, brother. So he's describing to you what the transmissions do wrong. Has he experienced the problem yet?
No. He never experienced it.
Right.
He kept it
first
for like
mistake.
A week. Never couldn't find anything.
Yeah. First mistake. He's trying to talk you out of fixing the truck, and he hasn't even experienced the problem yet. Go ahead, quickly, because I got 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Go ahead. And, so he's like, it just shifts with your driving style. You know, if it keeps doing it, let me know. If it gets worse. And it never get worse, never got better, you know, and I've had it for another 10 years and never had any issues. But, you know, it still does it randomly, you know.
Well,
I gotta forget it, you know, I'll deal with it.
Yeah, what I have seen on the Fords, and it's not just Fords, I'll see GM pickups do it too. You may, although you were at an early age when this started, I want to eliminate the obvious. I want to eliminate the drive shaft. Make sure, if you want to have somebody pull the drive shaft, make sure the splines on the output shaft of the trans are ungrooved, gouged, or worn. You know what I'm saying? Such that the yoke doesn't sit cockeyed, or the yoke isn't grabbing at an incorrect angle where it goes into the splines of the shaft. I've seen the output shaft of the trans gouge the inside of the front yoke and create some interference problems, and it doesn't slip right. And it sounds like it's especially over speed bump, because it'll change the dynamic as it goes over. And it'd be interesting to know, does it do it with the speed bump front tires, back tires, or both tires? That might change my thought process there. Is the drive shaft somehow influencing the clunk? Number one. Number two, the electrical connector, and this is where the guy was sort of right, the electrical connector down under the trans, I believe on the right side of the case, has a bunch of issues. You may want to take that connector apart to look to see, is there any kind of moisture, any kind of corrosion inside? Because they're known for, they're porous, basically, and electrically there are all kinds of, problems because of that. Just to make sure that connector is good, clean, and dry, and you may want to pack it with a little dielectric grease. And, other than that, yeah, at this point it may be an internal trans problem. I get that. But the only other thing I could suggest is just make sure, I'm assuming there's no trouble codes, just make sure the truck has the latest software flashes in it for the trans for operation, because I know Ford released a bunch of software updates to allow that trans to shift better. I'm just not sure if it would help in your situation. Just a couple of three things to check, and we appreciate you taking the time to call us today, Rick. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Welcome back. We're on the name of the Car Doctor. Brian, Minnesota. 3 minutes. Go, baby. Go.
06 Ford F-150. Four-wheel drive.
Right.
When I go to turn the key, when I bought this truck, the 4x4 light usually comes on the dash.
Right.
Well, all of a sudden, all that quit.
Okay.
And none of the four-wheel drive would work.
Okay.
Monkeyed around, checked the switches. Changed them because I had another one here. The transfer case shift motor is good. Everything will work when I wash the motor. I washed under the hood, and everything worked. and okay. I kind of washed up around where the ECU and all that is.
Mm. You have a scan tool?
I do.
Year, make, model, or OBD2?
It was a Snap-on that I had on there, one of my buddies.
Okay. Because if you can get into powertrain data, year, make, model is an 06 F-150. You should be able to, you should be able to go to four-wheel drive data. And okay. And you have a what do you have to shift it into four-wheel drive? Is it mechanical linkage or it's the knob?
Just the electronic selector switch.
Right, you have a switch. So you should be able to walk it through, you know, 4x4, 4x2, 4x4 low, etc., and see the changes on the scan tool. That at least tells you that the scan tool is communicating with the module. That tells you that the switch is communicating with the module and that the switch is good. Because while it's doing that, it's telling you that, yes, it can do it, but you're telling me the four-wheel drive light doesn't come on. If the four-wheel drive light doesn't come on, then we've got an electrical supply problem either to the two IWE solenoids out under the fender well in the right and left front corners. All right. Or you've got a problem wiring down to the four-wheel drive motor. You got a pencil real quick?
I do.
Ford Technical Bulletin 06-8-15. 06-8-15 talks about the IWE solenoids and all the problems associated with them. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.